Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Five On Cast, your sometimes weekly source for insights into whatever the hell I happen to care about at the time. I am your eternal, ever-burning co-host, Patrick Downs. Some may call me the modern Johnny Blaze. And today, I'm joined by Scott Ingram, account director and the host of the Sales Success Podcast. There's three of them, and I figured I didn't want to say that word too many times. And also author of a book with success, and it's titled Sales Success Stories. And I've titled today's episode the Success Cast because I want to see how many times I could say the word. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Rhymes with sex. Good. Yeah, you're burning. If you're burning, you must be on fire.
Oh, I am burning. I'm burning. Hey, man, do you want to add a little bit of color to your introduction for everybody?
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, so this all started for me. I mean, I'm a quota carrying sales guy. I work for a professional services firm during the day. And then all the rest of my time, it feels like these days, what started with the Sales Success Stories podcast, where I only interview individual contributors who are either number one top performers, or I joke, I'm willing to settle for the top 1%, which I occasionally do. And that has turned into the Sales Success Summit and the book and the Daily Sales Tips podcast. And yeah, it's a beast at this point, but I love it.
How do you run three podcasts?
Very carefully. You know, I've got a really good team. Over time, I actually just brought my designers 4 years ago. They designed my first podcast cover. I found them on Fiverr. And here we are later, they're full-time husband and wife team out of Moldova. So that's a big deal. That's been game-changing. We've just done that in the last month here. Then I've got an amazing audio editor. I've got an amazing guy that does all of the show notes. So my job is mostly talk to somebody, record it, and then hand it off and let the magic happen. So that's a big part of that secret, because if I was trying to do the editing myself and all that stuff, I wouldn't be here.
I don't think people realize how long audio editing takes.
It's horrible.
It is horrible.
Yeah.
As soon as
I figured that out, I outsourced that. I haven't done any of my own editing in years.
It's crazy. I might do like a live stream with editing because I want to drive everybody crazy by hearing the same three words repeated 100 times in a row, trying to cut something the right way. That's what haunts my dreams. Personally.
Yeah. That's the reality.
So I'm sure everybody's got the vibe now, but we like to vibe a little bit differently here. So before we get into the topic, which is going to be about selling through champions versus multi-threading in enterprise sales, I want to get into some personal questions. Are you down for this, Scott?
I'm always down.
All right. We're going to start with a banger here. When is the last time you cried?
I probably during some movie or TV show or something. I tend to get a little weepy-eyed and in emotional stories. So yeah, that's probably more like not outright cried. I don't remember the last time that I like full-blown cried. Actually, you know what? That'll happen. I know what it was. It was when we put my last dog down, and apparently that will be happening again Saturday at 2 o'clock. I just had to schedule my poor little dog. Has a tumor. It's a long, horrible story, and it is unfortunately time. So we're having some folks come to the house so we can take care of that situation. So I will cry on Saturday. I can almost guarantee that.
It's the first time we get a future cry.
Future cry.
It's good to forecast out your cries.
That's right. That's right. I've got a cry pipeline going on here, and that
four.
One I'm going to close.
Oh, man. I mean, usually when I ask any man when's the last time they cried, it's related to a dog. It's always related to a dog.
Yeah.
It's a very primal thing too.
Yeah, it sucks.
Really does. My heart goes out to you on that one, man. One's definitely a different focus. I think a lot about like self-improvement and what I'm trying to improve about myself in general. What is something you feel like just like really bothers you about yourself or your personality or your habits that you want to change but have had a hard time with?
You know, it's actually something I'm pretty good at, but I'm just not great at it. And that is, and I even presented on this at the summit last year, is focus, right? It is just, focus is so important and so freaking hard to do. And really, through just the pandemic period, it has been sort of an extra struggle. I need to redouble down on my systems and my processes and get some other stuff kind of turned off again, because stuff has crept into my life. You know, before all of this, before March, I didn't watch the news ever. I watch the news all the damn time, and it's a problem.
It's bad. It's everywhere too. You look at your phone, your computer, your TV.
Yeah.
The news is everywhere.
Yeah. And it's uprisings. Like addicting. I mean, but they do these things on purpose. I mean, the social platforms, all this stuff. I mean, it's designed to keep you engaged. And I'm like, no, I need to be disengaged. And so it's something I have to work at.
I mean, do you actively shut everything off when you're doing one task at this point?
Kind of. I am a conscientious Facebook objector. So I disabled my Facebook account years ago. And there's very few things that will trigger a notification on my phone. So yes, there, but like most people, I've got way too many tabs open and, you know, just all the regular stuff. Every now and then I'll use a tool. I don't remember the tool that I use. The brand name of the tool is Inbox Pause. So there's a nice little tool that will allow you to work in email. Cause so much of the time, like I need to work in email, but email's distracting cause I keep getting emails. And so there's a tool that I use in Gmail that allows me to keep new emails from showing up. It's pretty handy.
And everybody, that's called Inbox Pause. We're not sponsored by them, but I am down to take sponsorships.
There you go. Listening. First one's free.
That's very helpful. Yes, first one. So we'll cap off with this question. Trying to be a little positive here. There's a lot of negativity in the world right now. What is something that has recently made you feel like really optimistic about humanity in general, whether it be an action or something someone said or something you observed?
I get that pretty much every time I do one of my sales success stories interviews. And I guess it was last week, I recorded the 100th episode. Hasn't released yet, but maybe by the time you release this, it'll be live. We didn't talk about your release timing. Those conversations, it's not just humanity, it's sales. Like what people don't realize is there's so many just negative, horrible stereotypes in sales. The greatest salespeople also happen to be some of the greatest humans. Super consistent thing. Like they're not the biggest shyster very rarely wins, certainly not. And if you look at it over the long term.
Definitely over the long term. And shockingly so, even during the short term. I mean, that stuff gets discovered really quickly.
Oh yeah. What comes around goes around. And that's happening faster and faster and faster these days, I feel like.
Yeah. And I think people that are like morally like very right typically do things like help out their colleagues and put extra effort into learning and really caring about how people feel. And ultimately, like that makes you a better performer, typically.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just reinforced learning, right? If you want to really understand something, go turn around and teach it to somebody else.
That's such a good point. Yeah, it's funny when people say like, if you can't do it, you're going to teach it, right? The whole reductive thing about teaching. But that's not always true. I feel like theory is different than execution. But some people have brains for theory. And I feel like that's something we should really be leveling up right now, where most people are just executing.
Yep. Well, and I think there's the balance. I think if you get too removed from the execution, right? If you haven't made a cold call in 20 years, I'm not sure you should be teaching people how to cold call.
It's true. Saying. Some people are naturally inclined to do it though. I feel like you can keep doing cold calls, but you might not be the best at it. You understand the theory, but maybe your brain doesn't connect the right way to being able to handle that rejection. I know some people that are not good on the phone, but understand things way better than I do.
Yeah, fair point.
But today we're going to be talking about being good on the phone. So everything I just said, we're going to like throw it away. And I love just completely discounting myself for at the start of an interview. I'm very, very interested in this because it's something that I've been personally dealing with, transitioning from transactional sales to more enterprise. Something we've noticed, especially with inbound, is that people are coming in and they're probably trying to check off a list, or they're not really involved in the buying circle. So you're having to take this person and sell through them as a champion. I've read all the books like The Challenger Sale, and they're the sequel with Selling Through Champions, but it's something that I can't grasp. So I'd like to get your take on it. And first, you had said before we started the recording that you cut your teeth a little bit in SMB sales, but mostly have had experience in enterprise. So I'd like to hear what kind of buying circles that you're used to selling to, and some of the successes and challenges that you've had in those sales.
Yeah. So typically, again, I work for a professional services firm, and the work that we do is all around the Oracle Marketing Cloud. So I'm a former Eloqua guy, kind of rode that ride. We went public. We were public for one whole quarter, and then we got acquired by Oracle, and I tolerated Oracle for 8 months or so. And then I joke, now I've been in this role, December, January will be 5 years. I joke, this is as close as I can be to Eloqua without having to work for Oracle. And so typically I'm selling to the marketing organization, and there's a variety of different stakeholders, right? A lot of times there's kind of marketing ops and the marketing technologists that are responsible for the tools. It might be the platform owners that we're working with. And then there's VPs of marketing and chief marketing officers and all those other folks that are really driving the business side of what marketing is supposed to be delivering. So there can be quite a number of players. And at times, I mean, these things do get awfully technical. So at times we're then coordinating with IT teams and just other parts of it. When you get into big enterprise marketing organizations, they tend to be very nuanced. Like there's different groups that are responsible for every little thing. And so depending on the scope of what we're working on, we might be interfacing with a whole variety of different teams. So I certainly see lots of stakeholders in most of our deals and conversations.
Is there a variety of levels that you start at?
Sure. I'm lucky in that I've been in this space for as long as I have. I don't do a lot of cold prospecting. There's a lot of relational work that we do because oftentimes we're being brought in by the Oracle team. So they've either sold a deal and they need to get it implemented, or they're trying to upsell a client and that's going to be a whole big project, or we need to right size a client, right? They've gotten sideways with somebody and we need to get that account turned around so that they can grow the footprint over time. So really it depends in so many different ways. I mean, at times we're being brought into the VP CMO level because we're trying to affect a very large strategic digital transformation type of deal. Other times I'm at I'll come in the door at a marketing manager level and we're trying to solve for, our integration between Eloqua and Salesforce is broken. the range is really, really significant. And, the trick is, regardless of those situations, I think you do need to get sort of wired in, and everybody's important, right? I really don't believe, I mean, yes, there's a power structure, there is a hierarchy, but these days, and probably even more so right now, I mean, decision-making is a very distributed thing. Right. There isn't a chief decider. There isn't, there was the book years ago, Vito, selling to Vito, the very important top officer. Man, that it's so rare that there's like, I'm the CEO, I'm gonna decide this is the thing that I'm going to do. No, like in order for the change to occur, they've got to have the rest of the team on board. There's got to be buy-in. There's a big change management component that goes inside any big deal. So it's not just, I've decided I'm going to sign and my team's going to have to deal with this. Well, that's not going to be successful. So at any one of these stages, like at one level, you're winning hearts and minds. At another level, you're winning budget. At another level, you're winning that kind of executive stakeholder champion type of thing, because again, if we're going to be successful in this project, we've got to get everybody on the bus and we've all got to be going in the same direction. So you got to be mindful of all that stuff.
Yeah. And I think defining some of that is helpful. So like a lot of the times when you're working with the marketing team on the integration piece, they're more of like the end user of what you would be doing. And then you're trying to get to the people that would impact change. But who is the person that's like the economic yes or no in your sales cycle?
It depends on the size of the deal, but typically that's a VP of marketing or it's a chief marketing officer, or sometimes in some of these organizations that decision lives in IT, right? Because again, IT is the actual platform owner, even though they may not be the end users.
Gotcha. So very often those people aren't involved in those first couple steps. And that's pretty similar to us. Mm-hmm. And we'll have somebody come inbound and I'm like, okay, I'm probably like three steps away from the person to pull the trigger. And it's pretty likely that that person that pulls the trigger won't even ever be involved with me. Mm-hmm. Is that pretty common for you as well?
I don't know that it's common. It's not uncommon. So I'd say it's, you know, 30-40% of the time. I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, for us, it's a VP of finance or a CFO that would ultimately sign off. And they don't care what our product looks like or what it does.
Right.
So it's an interesting scenario where I probably shouldn't sell to them because it wouldn't make a lot of sense besides the business case, maybe. That would be the only thing.
But you, if you sell to them correctly, it does make sense. And honestly, I don't know that you were ever showing off like, this is the amazing feature that we have. And it's this button that does this thing. What you're selling is, what is this going to do? What does this actually mean to the organization? And at some level, and the sooner you can do it, the better. The sooner you can articulate what that is to those economic buyers, the easier this is going to be, regardless of how you get there, right? Whether you're navigating internally or you're reaching out more directly and kind of jumping ahead in line.
And I'm curious about that specifically, about the jumping ahead, because I'll have a situation where the person really wants to sell it, probably because the idea of a salesperson talking to them is uncomfortable, whether that be because of a past experience or a vibe that they get, or that's just how they do things. How do you preserve that relationship with that person, but also still get to the person you need to get to?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's so much nuance in that, right? And just kind of managing people. I just heard about a deal. Somebody was telling me a story because it was just one of those end of the fiscal year, we got it. Well, we're going to do everything. And an RVP went nuts and went over his rep's head and essentially torpedoed the deal. Like it wasn't going to be able to happen on their timeline, right? It was going to happen on the client's timeline. And by making that move, they just screwed up the whole thing, right? So it's a really dangerous thing if you do it like a freaking cowboy, right? Like guns a-blazing, we're just gonna go through this. And I think that's becoming, again, truer and truer because of the distributed decision making. So, you know, what I'm typically trying to do is, if you're my champion and you need to get buy-in from your boss or your boss's boss or, you know, whatever that structure is, I need to build enough trust that you feel like we can at least have that conversation together, because I'm a sales professional. You're probably not. And Patrick, in this scenario, I'm not speaking directly to you, right? I'm speaking to the metaphorical champion here, right? And so I don't want to put the entire deal in their hands. They're not gonna know how to navigate the objections and the things that are gonna come up from the perspective of that economic buyer, for example, right? So ideally what we're doing is, hey, let's go do this together, right? Let me get you really comfortable with what I'm gonna do, what we're gonna talk about, what this presentation looks like, some of the questions that might come up. Honestly, it's no different than running a complex sales cycle where you have multiple people on your team that are working with you to win this deal. And you have to plan and strategize and prepare and get everyone on the team ready and understanding this is your role. If they ask this type of question, that's you. Or it might be, I'm going to quarterback this. I will point to you I will throw you the ball, right? When it's your turn to run or it's your turn to go catch a pass, right? So it's defining sort of those rules of engagement. You can do that with your customer too. If you're doing this right, they become part of the team. So let's go do this together. Now, all of that said, I have had some fascinating conversations with mega deal enterprise sales folks on my podcast who've done deals way the heck bigger than things I've ever done. Like most of these guys are doing significant eight-figure deals. And actually, by the time this goes live, because I need to create this right now, if you go to top1.fm/enterprise, I will have a list of all of those episodes. So guys like Trong Nguyen, who was the, he's been the number one guy everywhere he's ever been. He was the number one global account manager at Dell. He went to Microsoft and did the first of the their kind types of deals in insurance and financial services, and just truly incredible people. And one of those individuals was Brandon Fluharty. I talked with Brandon earlier this year. Brandon's at LivePerson. Brandon has done, at the time, I don't know what his stat is right now, he had done $11 million in ARR in 2 years. And one of the things that he's doing, this blew my mind, and I have been using this and playing with this, and it is super powerful. He has this concept of an executive memo. And so the idea is, and he got this, they pulled over a couple of executives from Amazon, and Amazon has a very memo-driven culture, sort of driven by Jeff Bezos. And what he's doing is essentially co-creating the story in written form with the rest of the team. And so it's this iterative process. And the idea is it's just a short document, it's a few pages that they can then put in front of that executive. So, okay, if I can't be in the room, this is the next best thing. And the real beauty of that, if you think about it, is A, it's more meaningful because it was co-created, right? We're using their language. We're incorporating their outcomes and all the things that they care about and are going to move the business in a meaningful way. And it's getting presented in a way that is actually memorable. Because imagine if you're that CFO. How many presentations do you think you sit through in a given week? And then what do you think your recall is on any one of those meetings? And that's assuming you're actually freaking paying attention and you're not sitting at home and totally distracted and balancing the books or something somewhere else on the back. And I know that's not what a CFO actually does, but it was fun. So, you know, it's now here's something that is like a true artifact that has the complete story and doesn't leave anything out. Because if you're just looking at my slide deck, you're missing all the nuance. You're missing the story that we're actually trying to tell and the change that we're trying to drive to win this business. Like, it's just not all there. So I've been playing with that idea a lot. Like, that whole concept has really changed my thinking and has changed my approach here recently.
I'd love to see one of those. That's a very interesting concept.
I need to follow up with Brandon again. I actually think he sent me a sample and we haven't done anything with it because he was going to post it or something. So follow up with me on that and we will find a way to have an asset for somebody. But in the meantime, folks, again, can go to, well, that enterprise link that I shared earlier, Brandon's episode will be linked there for sure. Great conversation.
Definitely listen to that.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. I was actually going to bring up the idea of a mutual action plan with you. I'm assuming that's something that you use.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the way that I see the executive memo, it's a companion to that joint action plan. And we spent a lot of time talking about this again at last year's summit, at the 2019 Sales Success Summit, just the structure and the process and how you're setting up those types of joint action plans. And they're important. They're great. They work really, really well. But what's missing from that, it's just a project plan, right? It's just steps. It doesn't have the story. And so to not only be co-creating, and that's super key in all of this, like together, we're going to define all of our next steps. And I think the most important thing when you think about those joint action plans, the end of the joint action plan is not the contract getting signed. That is the most selfish way to look at it. The end of the joint action plan is them being live and them seeing success. You have to go all the way through that through line because that is what the customer cares about. You have to ignore the fact that what you care about is that signature at the bottom of the page and then you're out, right? You're going to hand over to account management, customer success, and everything else. Like, heck no. But you need to incorporate them into the plan, right? If you are going to fully hand off, that's great. So part of that is going to be, here's the handoff meeting. Here's the kickoff. Here's who's responsible for these steps moving forward to make sure that we get you live, that we get you trained, that we move you on to success. You've got to go all the way through that process. If you're stopping at contract signed, you drop the ball.
I love that. I actually have one of my reps that uses something called the implementation preparedness meeting as the last step.
Yeah.
Where they'll be like, I just want to make sure I have all your details correct, that you understand the expectations of your onboarding and go through all that stuff. And that way, like, you're not always driving to the close, you're driving to that meeting.
Yep.
And he's found a lot of success and a lot less pushback.
Exactly.
To get that scheduled. Exactly. Than like, hey, because we should need to sign.
When you're doing this right, there is no quote unquote close, right? That's not a thing. That's just another step in the process. And sadly, it makes it a little bit anticlimactic, right? If you're managing this process and that joint action plan well, like, okay, cool, we got the contract, let's keep going. It does lose a little bit of it, of its excitement, but that's a really, really good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you could still get excited. You can find a way.
Of course.
Yeah, come on. That's money in the bank too. It's like, okay, cool. But I love it, man. The mutual action plan is something that I've kind of struggled with though, because it's always so boring and standard. And I feel like in enterprise sales, a lot of people are used to it, right? It's like, all right, you're going to go share this with your team. I'm going to get this for you. And then you're going to talk to procurement and then this and that. How do you maybe make that more unique and customized for the situation?
Well, the customization, it has to be based on their process. And so the first question you have to ask or understand is, have they bought something like this before? Because you want to find a trap. Try to sell somebody who hasn't bought within anything like what you're selling within that organization. They have no idea. So now where we have to get creative is, okay, who can we work with who can help us understand all the steps in your buying process? Because that's the detail you have to get out. Like, you can actually do sort of buying process discovery, right? It could be its own freaking meeting to get in, like, what are these steps? But again, if I'm tying that to the reason this is important is because you told me we need to deliver this result by this date. And if we work backwards from that date, that means right now we have to go fast. And in order to go fast, here's the things that we need to do. And the first thing we need to do is understand what are the things that we need to do, right? What are those components? If you tell them what they're going to need, like, oh, you're going to have to go get a security review, and then you're going to have to give me red lines, and then you're going to have to beat me up and negotiate with me. Why are you doing all that? None of that might be in their process. Like, no, we just buy whatever you tell us it costs. Awesome. So, you know, you really have to be mindful of their process, not your process.
What do you do when someone says, I've never bought anything like this before, and they're your first contact? How do you actually handle that?
So you find essentially a buying champion. Like, is there somebody in the organization that has, that we can partner with on this, who can kind of help guide us through the process, right? And that's what I meant by sort of that buying process discovery. So great, you don't have the answers. Let's go find somebody who does and understand that step and make sure that we're well aligned and build the action plan based on that.
I love that every time you talk about going around this person, you always say, let's do this. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
You're always bringing them to your side of the table. And it's not just, I'm going to go around you and do this without you.
Well, one of my favorite quotes ever, and I believe it's Anthony Iannarino who said it, is sales is not something you do to somebody. It's something you do for and with them. And that's a more true statement was never spoken about sales.
He's the best, man. Anthony's stuff is incredible. It's so good.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you sharing that, because every time I've done a mutual action plan, there is that weird moment where I'm just like, this feels like I'm forcing something on them.
Right. Right.
And I never want to feel that way.
Yeah. You've really got to get them enrolled in the process. Right. And again, it sort of comes with the trust, because hopefully you've been doing this long enough that you can say, look, the projects that we find to have the most success, this is the approach that we take, right? When we don't do this, when we don't make sure that we've got a good executive sponsor who's helping shepherd through the process and make sure if we hit any hiccups as we're going through implementation and these other places that can kind of step in and help us get the train back on the tracks. Like, if we don't have those things and if we don't follow this process, our odds of success diminish dramatically. And your buyer is going to care about what their risk profile looks like. So let's take the risk out of the equation, right? My job is to de-risk this thing for you. And this is how we do that, right? So explaining that to them, telling them those stories, sharing those examples, and then being a little bit prescriptive, even though you may not know what the prescription is, because like a good doctor, right? I don't know yet. Like, I still need to take your temperature and I still need to listen to your heart and do all this. Like, there's still things I have to understand before I can document the entire prescription. But this is the process of how we get from where we are right now to where you want to be.
I love how like ever changing sales is, because I'm going to take everything you just said, including the executive memo and the we language, and take it back to my team and inform it communally with them. But I'm curious where you see things going next, like especially in high ticket and enterprise sales. What's going to be introduced soon that's going to shake everything up and just maybe even change the way we're looking at it right now?
And I don't know, my crystal ball is really, really cloudy at the moment. I do feel like a prediction that I made, and it's been a while. I feel like this was 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago. Maybe it was on the HubSpot blog, right? It was like the end of one of those end of year, like, what's your prediction? What's going to happen? And I said, you know what? I think the pendulum is going to swing back from, because at that point, we were so far down this automation path that everything was impersonal. There was just no human left in the way that people were trying to execute their processes, right? And I feel like I've been pretty right in that the pendulum is really starting to swing back in. You have to bring a lot of humanity into the way that you're prospecting, into the way that you're running your deal cycles, because none of us really want to put up with like that kind of automation type of stuff, right? So I think a lot of what's coming is going to be more and more of this technology augmentation rather than automation, right? I think it's tools that make us better, that allow me to execute better, but not necessarily do it for me, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. A good friend of mine, Justin Michael, talks about the whole cyborg idea all the time, about sales reps are going to become half augmentation very soon. But I've also seen a prediction that sales reps, especially SDRs and people that are prospecting, are going to be more tied to marketing and copywriting and content creation than ever very soon. I think that's already happening, but I don't think phone prospecting will ever go away. But I think the really successful SDRs are going to be people that are big on LinkedIn and other social sites and are producing newsletters and blogs.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that in a lot of ways. Where I take a little bit of a more controversial stance is, again, just having talked to now 100, you know, true, genuine world-class top performers. What surprised me, I actually thought like these are going to be the cyborgs, right? These are going to be the people that have nailed the technology and are maximizing the heck out of it. And they're just running circles around everybody else. The reality is like the opposite. The reality is they're using less tech than most people. And going back to the very beginning, they're less distracted, right? Like their core tool set is like, yeah, dude, I use LinkedIn, email, my calendar, a pen and paper. You know, it's there's a lot of really old school elements to it. And I think there's power in that. You know, I did some research. I mean, this has been a while, but I did kind of a deep dive on this idea of like, wait, this is coming up a lot, that people are at the top of their game taking handwritten notes, and the retention difference between typing your notes and handwriting your notes is like five times, right? So I think we have to be really mindful of this stuff. And where I really start to disagree on the all in tech side is it becomes even more distracting when you're trying to figure out how do these 20 different tools all go together and talk to each other and do all this stuff and do this magic. I think instead it's having a really strong core tool set. Like less is more. So what are those fundamental tools that are going to make the biggest difference? And let's get them talking to each other. And beyond that, like ideally the technology should become invisible. But I think for most of us, the technology is in our face and it's distracting us and it's keeping us from doing what we actually need to do.
I think AI is interesting because it's less of like an automation tool and more of, like you said, augmentation, mm-hmm. where it can tell you like the best possible move, but you still got to make the move. Like yeah. there's all those things that are like Kaya coming out from Outreach and Lavender I've heard of recently, where it'll be like, here's how you sound. Here's how you should sound. I think that stuff's really interesting. Yeah. And it's not just like throwing out templates. Right. I think that's yes. the stuff that's going to dive in.
100%. I'm waiting for AI to get smarter, right? Like it's still, you know, if my relationship with my Alexa is any sign, we're not there yet. I'm like, come on. I ask you for the same stuff freaking every morning and you only get it right about 60 or 70% of the time. Look, figure it out. Let's go. Come on.
Come on, Amazon. What are you doing? Bezos, if you're listening, we're coming for you, man.
That's right. That's right. Call to action. We're going to put Patrick in everybody's living room and he's going to answer.
Oh, God, man. That sounds like a nightmare. Imagine that's the afterlife. You're just stuck in that little...
It's like the Simpsons. You know how they put the heads in the jars of the famous old people? Maybe that's what it is. Famous dead people.
That
not
sounds like a nightmare
people.
To me, man. Well... I feel like that's a good place to end it, Scott. What about you, man? You feeling good?
We're good, man. You said you were the funny one, so I figure we got to kind of close it out right there.
Well, you looked at my LinkedIn. That's good, man. I think I am the funny one, but I hope this validates that to somebody, especially Jeff Bezos.
You know, it's probably like my family, though. I think I'm the funny one, but nobody else agrees.
You're very funny. I'd like to see some LinkedIn content from you that's just all jokes.
My kids don't share your opinion.
Okay. Are they consuming your LinkedIn content?
Yeah, probably not. I got to get them on that train.
I think if anything, corporate bro, and especially the stuff he's doing with Bravado, have proved that there's a huge market for sales humor that is not being tapped into.
1,000%. You know, not just sales humor, right? Because not everybody's funny. Maybe we all think we are, but not everybody's funny. I think it's, and Amy Quick is the champion of this, right? It's just the more human and real you can be, that's just what wins the game. Like we'll go back. We'll end on the high note. We'll go to the humanity angle, right? I think it's humans win this thing, right? And the more human you can be, that's what's winning in sales right now.
100%. And Amy is actually a business partner of mine. So thank you for shouting her out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Huge fan. Amy, I love you. Thank you. Oh, man. Is there anything that you want to plug, Scott, before we go today?
Yeah, man. The thing, speaking of Amy Quick, because Amy is one of our presenters. So October 12th and 13th is the Sales Success Summit. And thanks to an incredible set of sponsors, the live stream of that event is free. And not just a live stream. So last year it was a static live stream. This year it is the live stream experience. And we're going to incorporate not just some really, really incredible content from these top performers, but we're going to allow a lot of opportunities for you to engage with the broader sales success community. So if you go to top1summit.com and get registered for that baby, we're going to drop so much value on your head, you won't know what to do with yourself.
Hopefully not enough to get a concussion because
I'm trying.
I don't want to hurt my viewers that way. I just want to hurt their hearts. I will put that in the description.
It make me cry.
I know, man. I cried this morning. I sometimes wish people would flip those questions on me because the answer to that one is always this morning. Or if it's later, it's like this afternoon.
What are you doing to yourself every morning that's making you cry?
I don't know. It's the whole isolation thing, man. Like I think the whole lockdown has made it everything feel heightened where yeah. I can like stub my toe and I'll just like break down crying about the state of humanity. I'm just like, I'm sitting here suffering alone and the people around me have no idea. And all
I think we both need to stop watching the news. That'll cause it too. God.
And before we go, I do want to shout out the situation in Belarus. Have you seen this?
I did my research. I saw your posts.
Yeah, it's crazy because PandaDoc, the company I work for, was founded by Belarusians, and they're incredible, kind, brave people, and they're being terrorized right now. There was an election that was falsified, and there are now protests in the streets, and people are being taken. There are people at our company that have been taken by state police. People are getting shot. Windows are being broken every night. It's really bad, especially in the last weekend. Our employees can't work right now because their internet, 80% of it was just cut off. So they're not able to communicate with the outside world. So please spread that. It's very important that people know that right now.
Thanks for putting it out there, man. It's crazy.
It's scary, man. But yeah, if anybody here is listening and somehow has connection from Belarus, we are with you. Thank you so much for your fight. And thank you for listening today. If you want to connect with us more on any of these topics, we are on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, everywhere. Five on Friday is the parent. And Five on Cast, anywhere you can get podcasts. Thank you again for being on here, Scott. It's been a pleasure, man.
Pleasure's all mine, man. Thanks, Patrick.
Awesome.